This is the Voice of the Vortex. Hello. Today is December 14th, 2010. Every science fiction fan I know is nostalgic for some era of our shared literature. For me, it's cyberpunk. William Gibson in particular. I was feeling a bit burned out by all the new fiction I had been reading, and so I picked up Count Zero, the second book in the Neuromancer series, which came out when I was 3. One of us hasn't aged well. Gibson's prose is a joy to read, of course, but I find myself noticing all the places where his vision of the future fell short. The characters read daily news faxes, a merging of two obsolete technologies that somehow never caught on. The modern equivalent would be the RSS feed reader on my smartphone, which has the benefit of updating constantly and not leaving me with a pile of dead trees. The cyber cowboys do their hacking with software loaded onto cassettes. I've never actually seen a computer that took cassettes. The national government in Count Zero is basically non-existent. The characters can't even remember who the president is, and mercenary forces in the pay of multinational corporations operate within the United States. In the real world of AD 2010, I find myself growing uncomfortably aware that I am one of the only one of my group of friends not employed, either directly or through a contractor, by the government. Big corporations may be in charge of the government, but they don't want to do any actual governing. There's no profit in it. One theme that I notice has been carried forward into Gibson's 21st century works is the idea that the very rich are, as he says, no longer even remotely human. The story of Marley and Joseph Virek reads very much like the relationship between Hollis and Hubertus Bigend, with the main difference being that Virek loses. I do not think that it is science fiction's job to predict the future. Count Zero ends with poetry, space stations, gods, and squirrels. It's beautiful, regardless of how reality turned out. It is still as valuable to me as books like Arthur C. Clarke's 2010, with its improbable moon bases, and Foundation, where nuclear power stands in for magic. Cyberpunk, like all good science fiction, spoke to the anxieties of its time. Now the internet has become ubiquitous, and cyberpunk has fallen out of fashion. We have Firefox instead of The Matrix. And it's hard to write romantic stories about hackers when the popular image of them is of children with no technical expertise at all who download denial-of-service scripts from their message board buddies. The internet is just another place to buy books and socks or to hang out with friends and family. People are still writing things that could be classified as cyberpunk, but these are either shelved with the thrillers or subsumed by science fiction as a whole. Stories about the melding of human and machine and the increasing speed at which our technological society is running seem to have been overwhelmed by singularity mania. More on that later, maybe. Others, who might have once written cyberpunk, have had their attention arrested by the ecological tragedy unfolding all around us. For example, The Wind-Up Girl feels a bit like cyberpunk, but with an ecological rather than technological focus. Ted Chiang's The Life Cycle of Software Objects is not cyberpunk. It does not have the aesthetic of cyberpunk. Instead, it has robot babies. The book itself is gorgeous, with elegant watercolors that keep the reader from detaching themselves from the plight of the nascent intelligences in the story. Showing the reader a picture of a man hitting a baby with a hammer, even a robotic baby, makes the subsequent description of artificial intelligence abuse that much harder to read. Ted Chiang's narrative is deceptively simple and sounds like something that could happen on any number of online communities I've participated in. An artificial intelligence program is introduced in the form of adorable baby animals. It becomes popular. And then, what do you do if your fashionable pet is an AI? And what do you do when your adorable baby AI grows up? This is the first Ted Chiang work that I have not heard narrated. I wonder if it wouldn't benefit from that treatment. The Voice of the Vortex was inspired, in part, by Jared Axelrod's The Voice of Free Planet X. I'm still working my way through the 160 episodes he produced before he switched to Fables of the Flying City, the promotional preview podcast for his upcoming steampunk graphic novel. I liked his short fiction, his interviews, and his rants. I liked Panda, and I liked Captain Stilton, and I want to like Fables of the Flying City. But I am 4 episodes in, and every episode is setting my teeth a little more on edge. In the last episode I listened to, our hero messily humiliates a rival woman, and the audience goes wild. So far, the main character is too perfect to be believed. She's smarter, braver, faster, and just generally better than anyone else in the Flying City's Air Force, so far. It almost reads like Mary Sue fan fiction, which is weird, because Jared Axelrod is a talented writer. His writing is what hooked me on the voice of Free Planet X from the very first episode. I'm going to keep listening because, well, because it is Jared Axelrod, and I know he can write. A while ago, I was convinced to try probiotics. My doctor, well, I did as I was told. I also did my research. This is what I found, which led me to give up on the big, expensive pills. First of all, the standards of manufacture for probiotic supplements are as low as for any other supplement. They're regulated like food, which means they don't have to have any active ingredient. Second, when there is an active ingredient, it's usually some lactobacillus strain or other. That's just one little organism in the bacterial riot of the human gut, which contains hundreds of different species. Third, I see no reason to believe that even the relatively acid-tolerant lactobacillus in those pills can survive being dropped into a hydrochloric acid bath, which is what we humans keep in our stomachs to sterilize our food and prevent infection. Finally, the studies that I found were decidedly meh. I, for one, I'm not going to spend any more of my money on meh. In local news, the Kansas City Science Fiction and Fantasy Society has decided to start their own podcast. If you wish to participate, please come to the Pod People meeting at 5:30 on December 18th at the Writer's Place. And once you're there, why not stay for the Kansas City Science Fiction Society's Christmas party? A raffle will be held to help the Pod People buy their equipment. The Christmas party starts at 6:30. The Voice of the Vortex is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works, Share Alike 3.0 license. To comment on this episode, or to submit flash fiction for future shows, drop an email to voiceofthevortex, all one word, @gmail.com. Show notes are available at voiceofthevortex.podbean.com. This is Sarah Frost, the Voice of the Vortex, signing off.